This is Monty in the Morning, the show Phoenix Magazine readers voted number one talk radio show in Arizona.
Number one during your morning commute.
Number one whenever news breaks during your day.
And number one whenever and wherever you want to talk sports.
Now it's time for Monty in the Morning.
Hey, hey, America. Or Arizona, wherever you're listening. Monty Show. With another Corona update.
COVID-19.
We have to talk about being married while building furniture, which is something you should never do. I mean, I'm just pointing that out now. Baseball in Arizona. Tom Brady went on the Howard Stern show. Alimony's a joke. Divorce is horrendous. And, yeah, air quality in L.A. is some of the best in the world. Who knew? Good morning, Jake.
Good morning.
Are you done chopping the chicken yet?
Yeah, bro. I'm done. I'm good. I'm chill.
You know when you're like quarantined with people and you like when anytime you spend a lot of time with people, like in your space. See, I didn't curse. I'm trying not to curse as much. Mm-hmm. I got a message from some guy named Cody.
Who
listens to our show in Texas. His name is Cody, and he's from Texas. Okay. He lives just outside of Houston, and he asked me why I curse so much. And I said, I don't know, because frankly, I don't hear myself do it. I just do it. I never curse on the radio, but this isn't the radio.
Yeah, this is different.
So I curse a little bit. So fuck off. No, I'm kidding.
Don't sash me, Burkus.
Yeah, just relax, Cody. I don't know. It just is what it is. But anyway, the point is, So you know, like, are we at Corona burnout right now?
I mean, it'd be nice if this thing will come to an end, but I mean, yeah.
They say it is. By the way, the update is 401,000 cases in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
12,905 deaths as of 6 a.m. on Wednesday, April 8th.
Mm-hmm.
22,476 people recovered. Arizona's got 2,575 cases and 73 deaths. And I still maintain, with all due respect to our fine governor of New York, that California is doing the best job with it. I mean, Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, announced yesterday he's got 200 million masks a month.
Yeah.
How did you do
Flex.
That? Right? Eric Garcetti, the mayor of Los Angeles yesterday, announced that now, starting Friday, that if you're in LA and you walk into an essential business, you have to have a face mask on.
I like it.
Like, I think California's doing it the right way. Like, they were early on the lockdown. I think Gavin has done... I'm a big Gavin fan. I know Gavin a little bit from my time at KGO. Funny story, I went up for a job interview. I thought I was like being all secretive and going up to Seattle for a job interview.
Whoa.
And Gavin Newsom at the time, this was like 2005 or whenever it was. Fuck, I don't know. Now I hear it every time
Cody.
I do it. Cody? Every time I do it now. Anyway, it was many years ago. And so I walk out of this building in Seattle, right? And who's walking in? Gavin Newsom. And he's like, hey, Monty, good to see you. What are you doing here? I'm like, oh, just visiting some friends, bro. You know, like, you know. And so we stood there and talked for 5 minutes, and his security detail or whatever is like, hey, we have to go. Like, we have to go. So he walks into the building, but I was thinking to myself, oh, I just got outed. Because he's close with all the media in San Francisco, so I thought for sure
right.
that I was going to get toasted right. on that. But, you know, just knowing Gavin a little bit as a politician, I think he's done a great job managing this crisis.
Right.
And he's been communicative. You don't see him on TV every day, which I think is really smart. And I think he's doing a really good job. By the way, did anybody hear that the air quality in Los Angeles is some of the best in the world right now? How crazy is that? I think they were Swiss, like a Swiss scientist or science company and stuff.
Yeah.
That follows air quality around the world claims that right now Los Angeles has some of the best air quality in the world. And they attribute a couple of things. Traffic is way down, obviously. They've had a lot of rain recently in Los Angeles. And they're saying that the combination of fewer people out, less traffic, and more rain has cleaned the air in Los Angeles, which is remarkable. As somebody who lived in Los Angeles for many years, I can tell you it was always a struggle. Same thing in Salt Lake City. A lot of people don't realize with inversion that the air quality in Salt Lake City is not great.
Yeah.
But this has long been known during Corona anyway, that like in China, air quality has gotten way better.
Yeah, we all saw the space pictures on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. There's a lot of people who joke about it. Maybe it's not a joke. Coronavirus has allowed the earth to heal a little bit.
Allowed the earth to take a break.
Yeah, like if you look at the canals in Venice, or where there's now dolphins again in the canals in Venice, and you can see the bottoms, and it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's here, no, legit.
So we'll talk more coronavirus in a minute, including this Ellen DeGeneres thing. Like, we'll talk about Ellen in a minute. I'm really surprised by that. I want to start with baseball in Arizona because I'm fascinated by this idea. And if you don't know the story, Major League Baseball has admitted that they are considering playing the entire season in Arizona. So they would use Chase Field as their home. And they would use satellite locations because there's about a trillion baseball stadiums here for spring training. And they're talking about playing the entire season in Arizona.
Right.
And they're talking about it without family, so without wives and girlfriends, without kids, without mom and dad, without – and there's two plans really to start it with no fans in the stadiums. So no fans would be attending. But – I think this is a good idea, first of all. And I am a member of the media to a certain extent. Like, I've worked in professional sports my entire career.
Right.
Screw the media who says, well, you can't play the season in Arizona because the press boxes aren't big enough.
Schemers trying to control their little worlds.
What are you talking about, man? Who cares about the press? The stadium's going to be empty. Sit in the seats, dude.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and I agree that press boxes and spring training stadiums are not huge. Do you really think that's a consideration for whether or not to play spring or to play the season in Arizona? I don't think it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think media members are just like, well, you're going to have the media for all 30 teams in one press box. That's not good. And it's like, well,
you're going to have to.
You're going to figure it out.
You're going to have to take shifts, kids. You're going to have to share.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it's not rocket science. And I agree that, you know, obviously teams like New York, Chicago, Boston, L.A., they have larger media contingents. Okay, cool. I'm good with that.
And they should get the priority.
You're going to have to shift around and stuff. I get it. But that's not a reason not to play it in Arizona. I think one of the main reasons not to play it in Arizona is the heat. Because they're talking about playing three games a day at Chase Field.
Mm-hmm.
And not allowing games to go past seven innings, not allowing games to go to extra innings, right? Because if you have a game, if you have game number two go to extra innings, you're screwed. So they're talking about not allowing games to go to extra innings, which I guess I'm on board with. And they're talking about playing a compressed schedule, playing 100 games instead of 162.
Right.
I saw on Twitter, I think it was yesterday.
Yeah.
But I think the heat is a real concern here. August baseball in Arizona is a 10 o'clock at night first pitch.
Yeah.
Because it is, and I know some people realize this, it's fucking hot in Arizona. Like, it gets hot.
Yeah.
And there are, even if you do 10 o'clock first pitches, there's going to be 100 degree first pitches.
Oh, easily. Yeah.
So heat here is a real thing.
Yeah.
Right? For those of you who are not in Arizona, heat here is a real thing. And you certainly couldn't play outdoor baseball in August in the middle of the day.
No.
That's just not an option. And the other issue is a lot of spring training facilities, the clubhouses are not connected to the dugouts. In fact, most clubhouses are not connected to the dugouts. And you might wonder why that's an issue. Well, if you're a player and it's 100 degrees out and you're playing baseball, you want to escape to the air conditioning. Well, what are you going to do? Walk all the way beyond the right field wall every time you want to get to – the air.
Yeah.
Like, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
So I think the heat is the bigger issue when it comes to playing games in Arizona.
Yeah. I don't know what the alternative is, though. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what you do about this other than you just have to. You have to find a solution where you can play them all at Chase. I mean, I really don't know what the alternative is. I mean, you could probably play June outside. You probably could, but after that, I mean, it's over,
dude.
Yeah,
much past that, I don't see how you're going to do anything past that.
Dude, and I think the second half of June, most years, I mean, we've been in Arizona 5 years, and in my experience, the back half of June is where, like, ratchets up. Like, it really starts getting hot. So, you know, I just think, you know, you got to figure out how to do this at Chase Field. Like, that's the alternative. And if that means playing, you know, 7-inning games or, you know, whatever you got to do to accommodate this, then you got to do it. It is what it is.
And I saw one person say, hey, look, if you started games at 7 a.m.
Yeah.
And you played 4 games a day.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So 7 to 10, 10 to 1. You know, but the problem is, if a game ends at 10 a.m., you're not starting the next game at 10:05. It ain't high school, right? You're going to have to manicure the field. They're going to have to warm up.
Some of those players and the teams are going to have to make concessions on that front a little bit.
Sure. So if you play 7-inning games,
mm-hmm.
let's say you play 7 to 9.
Yeah.
Then you play 10 to noon.
Right.
1 to 3.
Right.
So you could play 4 or 5 games a day if they were 7 innings and they went between 2 and 2.5 hours.
Right.
That makes a lot more sense to me.
Right.
To do it that way.
Agreed.
But is that real baseball?
Well, yeah. I mean, in this time, I think it is. I mean, if it's for Major League Baseball, no. I mean, it's not 9 innings, no hurry, no rush. Like,
it's not ideal. Just,
yeah. I mean, it's not ideal, but we're not in an ideal time either, you know? And I think it's better than doing nothing. I can tell you this right now. I'd rather see. I would definitely watch. In fact, I think Major League Baseball TV viewership will go up if they did this. I think, because you're going to get shorter games, you're going to see more games through the day, and you're going to see different matchups
and
unique products.
But the novelty will wear off.
Right, the novelty will wear off.
So I think it's going to eventually hurt viewership.
Right, but hopefully they won't get to that point, because hopefully Corona will run out of steam by the time we get to that point. You know what I mean? Like, you know, we'll do this for, I don't know, a couple months, maybe. I mean, they're obviously talking about playing the whole season like this, I'm saying, hey, if coronavirus wears off, it's not hard to just go back to the way things were, right? It's not a big ask to fly everybody back to their, you know, stadiums or whatever, and just play the rest of the season as you had it scheduled out, and just shift back to 9 innings. That's not difficult to do, right?
Right. Yeah.
So that's why I say, I think in this setup, when if you do what we're talking about here, the 7-inning thing, not going over that. I don't know what you do if you're tied after the 7th inning.
I don't know how you. I'm
not sure. Like in the Premier League, or even in the NHL, right? You get points for tying. You know, like, you get points, but that's not really how it works in Major League Baseball. It's wins and losses. So
correct.
I don't know. Do you just not care about that? And it's like, hey, whoever has the most wins.
I think you care about that. I think. That's why I said I don't know that this is a viable alternative for Major League Baseball. We're, you know, into the third week of April now, or coming into, this is the first full week of April. Opening day should have happened. You know, if you're able to do what, like, the KBO, the Korean Baseball Organization's doing, they're already back in season.
Yeah.
You know, and they're you know, trying to be responsible. But now with, you know, the experts saying that coronavirus is something that's going to be here for the long haul, that a vaccine will be critical to eradicating coronavirus, I don't know that this is even worth the risk. I mean, if you have a team or a player that contracts coronavirus, this doesn't seem smart. And obviously they're talking about, they're going to have measures in place. They're going to have, you know, temporal thermometers, which measure your temperature at your forehead. In order to get into the games, you're going to have to not have a fever. Like, all these things that they're talking about doing.
Yeah.
And my main point is, maybe we just wait until June. Maybe we play half a season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe it's just not worth the risk.
Right.
Right. That's what makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I want baseball as much as anybody. But is this really worth the risk? And is it worth risking, you know, player safety, not only with Corona, but with heat? Because heat stroke here in prime athletes is a major problem.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's worth it. It's seven inning games, changing the fabric of baseball. I don't know that that's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Major League Baseball, just for the record, Major League Baseball has made it very clear that, yes, they've talked about this. They have not planned it. They have not taken any secondary steps to execute it,
yeah,
or even explore it. It's been put on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is a viable alternative. The other plan that I heard yesterday that I thought makes a lot of sense is having regional hubs where, you know, there's an indoor stadium somewhere on the East Coast. Maybe that's Tampa.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe it's in Tampa and you play in Tampa.
Miami.
Marlins? Miami's a retractable dome, yeah, right? So you could do Miami. Yep. I don't disagree with that. But you could play in, oddly enough, wouldn't it be ironic to play in Houston?
Yeah.
Who's got a dome? But
Toronto.
That's the kind of thing that's the kind of thing people are talking about. Milwaukee has a dome stadium.
Yep.
But are you really gonna cut out Chicago and New York and Cleveland, and major market hubs?
I think for the time being, you don't have a choice. I mean, what are you going to do? Are you just going to, I guess the real question is, if you're going to do regional, then what is the point of, why are we putting an emphasis on indoor? Like, what is the?
Because it kind of ensures that you can't have rainouts.
Mm.
I mean, if you're losing games to rainout and you're losing games to Corona, if you're only going to play, let's say, an 80 game season.
Yeah.
You know, like that's a real problem.
Yeah.
So you cannot risk having rainouts or delays. So I think that's why that was broached. But I think it makes a lot of sense. I think you have, you have that technology and that ability to do that.
Yeah.
I think you could do it in Arizona on the West Coast, right? I think you could do it in Milwaukee
really,
and Houston.
There's not a lot of options west. That's the problem.
There's not. There's really not.
Dodger Stadium's a no. Angel Stadium's a no. San Francisco. Seattle, obviously no. There's not really.
Is Safeco a dome?
No, Safeco's not a dome. No.
Yeah, I guess not.
Like, no, that's an open field.
There's not a lot of options.
You
so
can't
I think
do it in Denver.
Right, but I think you could do it in Houston and Milwaukee.
Yeah.
I think you could do it in Tampa and Miami, and I think obviously you can do it in Arizona.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's plans you can put in place.
Now that I'm sitting here thinking about it, I guess I don't understand why the East Coast teams would come west. There's so many more options on the East Coast for
right.
this whole
well,
setup.
But number one, New York is a Corona hotspot,
right.
So you're not going to play any games there anyway.
Right.
As Barry the New York Jew points out.
Yeah.
That you're not going to play games in New York because it's a hotspot. Great
right.
point, Barry. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, tactically, like, there's 5-6 options on the East Coast, on the eastern part of the country, and there's one on the West Coast.
Well, yeah, but I really think the only viable options are probably Tampa, Miami, and Arizona.
Yeah.
And I think your East Coast teams will go to Tampa, Miami. And I think your West Coast teams would obviously have to come to Arizona.
Yeah.
And I think that's just the reality of it. If it's going to work, I just don't think seven inning baseball is baseball. I mean, Major League Baseball is 9 innings of baseball.
Yeah.
And I understand coronavirus and having to adjust. And I mean, I could see if this was spring training or if this was a ramp up period where in May you started playing games like this. Okay. I could understand that. But I just don't think it's the wisest thing to do to call it games that matter, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I could see a full-on spring training with no fans, and I could totally see that.
Yeah.
In both Florida and Arizona. Absolutely, I could see that.
Yeah.
But I think they also want to be able to control the environment. And it's easier to do that in one location than two. So,
true. Yeah. And there's a lot of resources that go into this whole thing, too. I mean, that I guess that's the bigger thing. Like, you know, when you talk about those thermometers and, like, you know, controlling access at the stadium
yeah.
and, like, all the people that are staff at the stadiums. Like, how does that work? And, I mean, there's just a lot.
Well, and Kevin on Periscope makes a good point. He says, what would you do with TV rights? Would you have any local TV broadcasts?
No, I don't think I would. I think I would.
That's a great question. I never thought about that.
That is a great question. And what I would do is I think I would, I think Major League Baseball needs to kind of have a setup where you're either streaming it or you're doing like a, maybe like a red zone setup, or what?
Listen, man, if you're the Yes Network or if you look at Time Warner, look at the Dodgers situation in LA. They finally got on DirecTV.
Finally.
And now you're going to tell the LA Dodgers that you can't broadcast your games locally? That it's going to be ESPN or MLB Network or that's crazy.
Well, but that's just what it is. Like, how are you going to do that? Like, how do you, it might be crazy.
Technologically speaking, it's very doable. I mean, you simply rotate broadcasters. The physical assets it takes to do broadcasting would never change or move.
Right.
Like, you need a satellite truck. Okay, well, now Dodger TV is going to connect to the satellite.
Right.
All
right,
cool. All right, well, now, you know, you need Comrex internet, high-speed internet. Okay, well, the Dodger broadcast crew, you know, you disconnect the Brewers, and now all of a sudden the Dodgers dial up. Like, it's not hard to do it, technically speaking, right? The hard part is, in my mind, how do you drive revenue through that when you know that the first probably 3 weeks is going to be great viewership and listenership? After that, it's going to be garbage because it's going to be so watered down. I think you'll do fine in major markets. I think New York, Chicago, LA-ish will do fine.
Yeah.
Right? But in the other thing that would really bother me if they played without fans is how are we going to get retribution against the Astros? Sorry, I stole that from somebody, but I think it's a good point. So there you have it. Hey, let's switch gears, talk a little NFL football. Tom Brady's on the Howard Stern show this morning, and just, you know, reading Twitter and getting Twitter transcripts, and I know this will surprise some people, I was right again. So let's recap, Jake. Go ahead and recap my rightness.
You go ahead.
Okay, so I'm good looking. I'm intelligent. People generally like me, and I'm always right.
Okay.
And I'm humble, too, so you know.
Well said.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate that, man. Mm-hmm. Tom Brady told Howard Stern this morning that he knew before last season that he was done in New England.
Okay.
And this brings me back to LeBron to Miami and LeBron to Los Angeles. This brings me back to every major athlete who's ever left a team.
Right.
And I always say this. They know they're leaving. Kevin Durant knew he was leaving the Warriors at least a year before he left the Warriors.
Right.
I think as soon as he won that second ring, they were out. Mm-hmm. He knew he was gone. Right. So the torn Achilles that everybody made drama about, did it help him stay in Golden State? No. Is it why he left? No. He left because he wanted to play with Kyrie in Brooklyn.
Mm.
That's why he left.
Right.
So I look at LeBron. LeBron was always going to be a Laker. Probably 2 years ago when he went back to Cleveland, he knew he was going to finish his career in L.A. And Tom Brady knew he was leaving New England a year ago. Did he know it was going to be Tampa and those god-awful uniforms they announced yesterday? No, he didn't. My guess is he thought it would be San Francisco or Los Angeles, the Chargers of San Diego, playing a soccer stadium.
Right.
Is who he thought he'd wind up with. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that he's being that candid. But again, and I know that the vast majority of people that dislike Howard Stern will never like Howard Stern. I love Howard Stern.
Yeah.
I listen to his show every day when I can.
Yeah.
And it's the reason I have Sirius in my car. And this is why you listen to Howard Stern. Because I will again say he's the best interviewer in all of media.
Right.
And Tom Brady's been on that show for an hour and a half at this point. And he's just going on and on and on about, you know, his situation. And he keeps in it real. So does it surprise you that Tom Brady is saying that he was out of New England before last season?
No, I think now that he's not a New England Patriot, he's able to talk about it. You know, I think you don't. These things never come to the surface while you're actually with that team. You know, it's just not what you do. I mean, that's a recipe for disaster. So I just think overall, yeah, I mean, it doesn't surprise me. This is how business gets done. Everything gets done behind the scenes. Nobody knows about it. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh my God, Tom Brady's leaving. All this is happening. But you being in the media and being around players, you know kind of how they work and like what their plans are and how all this goes down. So yeah, you were right about it. No surprise. I get it.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm good looking. I think one of the more fascinating parts of the Howard Stern interview this morning was Tom Brady was asked why he stopped going to OTA several years ago. Because people were like, oh, he's just maintaining his body. He said it has nothing to do with physical, why he, you know, the physical body of why he stopped going to OTAs. Tom Brady told Howard Stern that Giselle wanted him to start carrying more of the load at home. Brady said, quote, I had to check myself. Giselle wasn't satisfied in our marriage. So when the supermodel says, I'm out, you're going to change what you're doing. And I think this is the part of Tom Brady that we all wanted, right? Like, we all wanted, hey, tell me about sex with Giselle, which Howard Stern apparently asked him. Hey, tell me about your marriage. Tell me about your kids. Tell me about your life. And he's been very candid about it. And I think this is the fascinating part about Tom Brady, and this is what Tom Brady has done so well. He has kept his secrets secret.
Yeah.
And the one thing that you'll never criticize Tom Brady for is being a master of his brand.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Brady knows that his brand is built on the unknown. And I wish more people understood this. When your brand is built on the unknown, we're going to talk about Adele in a minute. Worldwide recording superstar that we know almost nothing about. Lady Gaga, perfect example. Tom Brady, perfect example. Why do people go nuts when Tom Brady on his Facebook live show kisses his son? Oh, he's kissing his son on the mouth because that's what we know about Tom Brady, right?
Yeah.
We know he's married to a supermodel who now we found out wasn't happy in their marriage because he was spending too much time with football.
Uh-huh.
So what did he do? He stopped spending so much time with football.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's what's so fascinating about Tom Brady.
Yeah, and he still went out and won a bunch of rings.
And he's got six Super Bowls. I think it's absolutely fascinating. The stuff about the Patriots, I think that the things about you know, the things about him, he, you know, he also told Howard this morning that he actually broke the news to Robert Kraft himself, which is not surprising because they have a father-son relationship. Tom Brady told Howard Stern that he was weeping when he was telling Bob Kraft that he was leaving the Patriots. That he, Tom Brady, was in tears.
Yeah, dude.
Emotionally broken.
Say, this ain't some easy thing. This ain't some, oh, well, see you guys later. Like, this is this is a big deal. This is this guy's life. Dude, he's worked his whole freaking life, you know, all the way back to the Michigan days, all the way back to playing football as a kid. He worked his whole life to win that first Super Bowl as a New England Patriot.
Yeah.
And then he worked his ass off to go ahead and win a bunch more. And so that's why I say to all those people who are like, oh, well, these guys just make easy decisions and they just go around and around and get paid
easy
and it's
peasy,
amazing.
Bro.
It's not, dude. Like, these guys are human beings and this is a huge deal. And, and I'm telling you, like, we had an epic debate over this. I'm telling you, if he does not win as a Buck, that's going to be a problem. Like, I hope that he doesn't go to Tampa and just flame out and say, oh, well, it was a nice couple of years. I guess I'll retire. Like, the expectation is you and Mike Evans and all those other dudes down there are going to go out and actually be something.
Okay, so that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah. Let's be honest. It's probably not going to happen.
Tom Brady also told Howard Stern today that he never cared about his legacy.
Please.
But what did I tell you?
Please.
Tom Brady's not worried about his legacy.
Okay.
Right? And I'm serious.
Well, he's going to be. He's going to be.
He doesn't have to be because he's won six rings. So that's why I've been telling you, a move away from New England is really low risk for Tom Brady. It's much more on the line for Bill Belichick.
It's not going to be a thing for Tom Brady where, you know, if he doesn't win as a Buck, he's not going to be a Hall of Famer. Okay, obviously the stakes aren't that high, but it's a little embarrassing and a little boneheaded to leave the Patriots to go to a team like the Bucks and then be an awful organization and be an awful team. Like, they need to be at least – he needs to at least get to the postseason.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I just think that going to Tampa – is low risk for him.
And by the way, the biggest loser in this whole thing is Jameis Winston, because when Tom Brady wins as a Buck, Jameis Winston's gonna look like an idiot.
Yeah, I agree with that. By the way, what do you think of the Bucks' new uniforms? If you didn't see them, they're on my Twitter feed, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. They're okay. I was sitting here while you were talking about that, looking at the Falcons hype video for their new uniforms. They look completely different than they've ever had before.
Yeah.
They have ATL across the front, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, I like the black ones the most. Those things are sweet.
I think the Falcons did a nice job. I think Tampa's uniforms are just, meh. Okay. They say Brady on the back here. Can I get a dozen? Like, I mean, that's honestly what this is going to be, right? Because nobody's going to get excited about that sweater if it's not got his name on it.
Yeah, and you better sell them now.
Yeah,
get
right.
It done.
I mean, that to me is fascinating. But by the way, and I know, again, I said this a minute ago, but Howard Stern deserves a hell of a lot of respect and a hell of a lot of credit, because to get Tom Brady to talk about his personal life, I don't think that Howard Stern would have done this interview if Tom Brady was like, yeah, we're going to stick to football on this, all right, Howard?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, you don't
Howard wouldn't have done that interview.
Dude, you don't go on Howard Stern and just do a cookie-cutter interview.
Yeah.
You know going in that it's going to be...
And he's going to ask you about sex with Giselle.
Yeah.
He's going to.
But I don't think Tom has an issue with that. Again, you can't tell me that Tom Brady, in one of the first major interviews he's ever done, like, you can't tell me that he doesn't listen to Howard... He doesn't know what
Correct.
To expect. Like, they
Correct.
Didn't talk about it for months on end before he came on. Like, that's what you have to understand about the radio business. Like, these conversations, when you're at that level, you're going to talk about, you know, like, hey, what are we going to be talking about in this interview? Like, what can I expect?
Well, for instance, one of the main discussions that's centered around Tom Brady's career is how many concussions have you had?
Right, exactly.
He didn't number them. But he told Howard Stern, I've had concussions, but I'm not going to retire because of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, damn, dude. Like, you hear him say that. And he said, asked by Howard Stern whether he should retire from football to protect his brain, Brady said, I've definitely had concussions. We all think we're going to live forever, but the reality is we don't know when our day is going to come.
Mm-hmm.
I could stop playing football because I'm worried about what's going to happen. Why don't I live my life the way I want and enjoy it the way that is most fulfilling for me?
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Well, I mean, he's got generational wealth. His kids and their kids will never want for anything.
Right.
Right? So, you know, between him and Giselle, who's, you
Loaded.
Know, I mean, absolutely, he prints money at that point with those two.
Yeah.
I think he's probably right. At this point, it's not, you know, Tom Brady is going to likely have severe issues with his brain. He's played football his entire life, and we know that happens to people who do that.
Yeah.
So I agree. I mean, at this point, you're 42, going to be 43. You might as well do what you love, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
He's got a 2-year deal with the Bucs. He plans to play at least those 2 years. So he's going to be 45 by the time he retires. And I think that's probably it, you know, at that point.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. He's not wanted to talk about his concussions. He goes on Howard Stern, and what's he do? He talks about his concussions.
Well, but I don't think you can, like, it's not a thing where, you know, Howard Stern has some, like, fairy dust on it. I think, yes, Howard Stern's really good at interviewing people, and I think the feel of his interviews is very just buddy-buddy, which is great.
Yeah.
But you can't tell me, again, that Tom Brady doesn't know that these things are going to come up. Like, he knows. Like, it's... Howard Stern's not looking to, you know, kneecap Tom Brady in the interview. He's looking to do a great interview, have him on the show,
yeah.
Do a great job with it, and that's it. Like, that's the expectation because Howard's been doing it so long.
The franchise, you named yourself the franchise. The franchise on Twitter says, why are we so fascinated by sex with other people's wives? Because we're guys and we think visually.
Giselle, bro.
We think visually. Yeah, and never mind, she's a supermodel. But I think is that surprising to anybody?
No.
I mean, no. I think that there's no question that we as guys are very fantasy.
Yeah, let's not play the
spent 20 minutes on Monday talking about how pornography is the great destroyer of men.
Yeah.
Right? So let's not pretend like, you know, I mean, I don't know. I probably did it more when I was younger. In fact, I know I did. I just don't think about, I don't know. I have a great marriage, so I really don't think about it that much, to be
mm-hmm.
honest. I don't think about other women in that light very often.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's human nature to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you see another, whether you're a man or a woman, can't tell me that women don't look at guys and are like, damn, that dude's hot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the whole reason that Rock's got millions of dollars, isn't it?
You know,
or Tom Brady or
yep.
Like, it's just human nature. You're attracted to beautiful things.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever. Speaking of marriage, we should talk about this Adele divorce. This is ridiculous. This is absolutely ridiculous. So if you didn't hear the story, Adele gets married. She's married to a dude for 3 years.
Yeah.
They get divorced. Her divorce settlement came out yesterday. She's worth $190 million. She's worked her entire career. She's got to give this dude $140 million.
I'm screwed.
She's got to give this dude $140 million. Of what is supposedly a $190 million valuation.
Yeah. That's not good.
A, why would you ever get married? B, hey, yo, do you know what a prenup is?
Mm-hmm.
If you got married for 3 years and had to give away $140 million of your $190 million fortune, somebody should get fired for that. Because do you not have a lawyer telling you, yo, Adele, you might want to sign this prenup right here. Are you kidding me?
Apparently she didn't. I don't know. Dude, again, you just talking about the mystery of people. I don't know anything about Adele.
She's one of the most mysterious people in the world.
She's a hell of a singer and on the surface level, seems like a nice person, but clearly these two didn't work out and she's paying the price for that.
Well, this dude's a gold digger.
Clearly.
Right?
Yeah,
and
clearly.
The first thing that everybody was saying is, oh, you wanted equal rights for women? Well, here you go. This isn't about equal rights for women. This is about divorce and alimony being a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said that. I'll say it again. I think it's disproportionately against men. Yes, I agree with that, that child support and alimony damages more men than women. But in situations where there's hundreds of millions of dollars in income on the line, it doesn't matter if you got man parts or woman parts because she's given up $140 million of that money.
Yeah.
A, cool, we're going to get a new Adele record.
Yeah, love it.
B, this is a joke.
Yeah.
This is wrong.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. I don't really know too much about the case or why this ruling came out of like what, you know, because for this to happen, in my opinion, like she, you know, there obviously has to be a reason, right? Unless it's
just
some kind of
hoax. Well, this has been a nasty divorce. This is not a hoax, by the way. Right. This is in the Daily Mail.
No, I'm not saying reporting of it is a hoax. I'm saying that she clearly had to. She either did something really bad or the judge is just biased. Like whatever.
Yeah,
whatever
I don't know.
You know what I mean? Like that's what I mean by a hoax.
This
like,
has
obviously
been
it's
a
real.
Nasty divorce with yeah. all kinds of awful abuse allegations. And
yeah, dude,
you were married 3 years and you're walking away with $140 million. I don't care what that lady did to you. You don't get $140 million of the $190 million she earned. I get it, man. Like, she made money while you guys were married, and you supported her in that. All right, cool. It ain't worth $140 million.
No chance.
Right? Is it worth half of her $190 million? No, it's not.
No.
Sorry.
I don't. That and that's the impressive thing. Like, okay, a million, 2 million. Okay, could kind of see that.
$140 million?
Well, like, that's, like, what, 60% of her total worth?
By the way, are you at least playing the piano on some of those tracks, sir?
Nope.
No?
Nope.
Like, are you a backup singer? Are you doing some vocal tracks? Because you're not. She earned that money performing.
Yeah.
And my point is, and I don't care if you're a lawyer, a radio host, or a singer, right? And this is the Jeff Bezos conversation.
Mm-hmm.
If you've been with somebody 3 years, you're not entitled to $140 million of their $190. Now, if you're Mrs. Jeff Bezos and he's out banging some TV anchor and you didn't know about it and you've been married to him for 30 years and you wrote the business plan, like, I don't know how many people realize this, but Jeff Bezos' ex-wife and he were together, I think, 30 years. They drove across the country to move to Seattle to start Amazon. She wrote the business plan while they were driving across the country. She wrote the business plan for fucking Amazon. Okay, that means you're getting a whole lot of his money.
Yeah.
And by the way, you were invested in that dude for 30 years.
Yep.
Okay? You built Amazon with Jeff Bezos. You're entitled to that money. But this theory about how this dude gets 140 of Adele's $190 million is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's wrong.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And again, that's why I say we don't know anything about this case. We know it's been a nasty divorce, but we don't know who the hell knows why this ruling came out. That's my question. Like, why? Like, what's the justification?
Dude.
It's either one of two things, right? It's either she did some horrible stuff that ratcheted this ticket up for her, or he connived his way into it. And yes, I'm with you on the fact that it's probably he connived his way into it, but who the hell knows, really?
The Stever says he's back in Arizona. Great to be home. Oh, nice. Thank you for your service.
Yeah, welcome
Stever
home, buddy.
Is a special ops guy in our military. He says, should feed him to the tiger. Well, man, we almost made it a whole day. We almost made it an entire show without a Tiger King reference. Damn it, Stever. Should feed him to the tiger. I can't remember. Carol Baskin reference right there.
Cold-blooded, clean, methodical, and thorough.
That's what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying, Zorg? But Real Fat Jesus makes an even better point. He says she can make him disappear for a hell of a lot less than $140 million. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's crazy money. That's dude. Crazy money, dude.
Yeah.
So whatever, it's fine. But I think it's 34 million people in the first week watched The Tiger King.
Yeah, dude. No, they're coming out with another episode too.
They're coming out with a follow-up episode.
Yeah.
Which I think is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, this whole thing is.
This show's a joke. I mean, it's an absolute joke.
I watched it, and I can honestly tell you. And I'm not being, Mr. High and Mighty, moral authority. Okay, well, I kind of am. That show's a crapshoot, and I think it's terrible television. And watching that show only supports the Tiger King and builds his brand and allows him to make more money.
Yep.
And that's what honestly, I'm not trying to be a jerk about it. That's what I have a problem with. Like, we watched the first three episodes of Ozark last weekend.
So good.
Good,
dude.
Good.
Dude.
Off to a good start, dude. Right? We're watching not The American President. Oh, my God.
The West Wing?
The West Wing. Thank you. We're watching The West Wing again, right? Cool. The Tiger King. I will never watch it again. I won't watch the follow-up episode. No, not happening. Anyway, I think divorce is broken. By the way,
yeah.
Update on home activities during the coronavirus lockdown.
Right, yeah.
For mm-hmm. Team Monty.
Yeah, right.
So, do you ever do something in your life? I'm 47 now, and I still have moments where I'm like, damn, dude, that's adult. Right, you're doing adulting.
Okay.
Like, we bought patio furniture. I say we, my wife, picked it out. We agreed we're going to buy patio furniture.
Right.
Okay. You should never build furniture together. When you, like, if you shop at IKEA, A, you're stupid. But B, do not build that IKEA furniture with your wife.
What the fuck's going on here?
Yeah, divorce. Adele. I guarantee you Adele got divorced because she tried to build IKEA furniture with her now gold-digging husband. So I, like the smart man I am, live by the theory of happy wife, happy life.
Right.
I allowed Mrs. Monty to pick out the patio furniture and assemble it on her own. I was not getting involved in that. Okay? And she did a great job. Right? Awesome. I think we got it on Wayfair.
Okay.
Wayfair, give me just what I need. Wayfair, give me just what I need.
Okay, moving on.
Speaking of Adele. Anyway, the point is, see, I'm a better singer than she is.
Right.
Where's my $140 mm-hmm. million?
Right, I want
it. The point is, don't assemble furniture with your wife. But what I've noticed is that buying patio furniture makes me feel old. Like, we fucking bought patio furniture. I don't generally feel old. And I don't know what it is about the patio furniture thing. It just makes me feel old.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know what it is. It's you have a house now. You're buying more things to support a more comfortable life in your home.
I've had a house for 10 years now.
Yeah, but now you're like, this is like settling in now. I mean, this is like,
that's true.
You haven't lived somewhere. When's the last time you lived somewhere for 5 years?
It's been a while.
L.A.?
It's been a while.
Yeah.
You know, like it is, we're adulting.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah.
It's funny. Somebody offered me a radio job the other day. Well, wanted to talk to me about a radio job the other day. And I was like, Nah, I'm good, man. I'm good. Was on the East Coast. No, probably not. Paid well. No, I was
No.
I think I'm good. Like the Yelpatory is treating me well.
Yeah.
You know, we have the podcast. I used to work at ESPN Radio before coronavirus canceled all my appearances. you know, like I have a good thing.
Right.
So why, you know, like I just don't see the need to do it.
Especially on the East Coast. I mean, come on. Let's not kid ourselves here.
I don't know. You hand me afternoon drive in a East Coast major market.
Yeah,
I would consider it. But
okay, are we talking about Upper East Coast, Lower East Coast, or Middle East Coast?
Your mom.
What are we talking about here?
Your mom.
I don't know. Are we talking about rural North Carolina, or are we talking about urban cities?
Major markets surrounding the Northeast.
Okay,
Major Northeast market.
All right, so that's a little different. That's a little different than ho-hum North Carolina and nowhere to be found.
No, major market.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Let's
put it this way. Top five market in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like mid-sick, probably between $300,000 and $400,000 in pay.
Yeah, I mean, that's okay. That's a little different. I mean, that's a lot of money.
You know, but
I don't know. That's still a lot, though. I mean, you're moving all the way to the East Coast.
Like, I have a really nice house. Dude. My wife is really happy. Mm. We have a good existence. I bought patio furniture. You know, it's like that whole thing where dude, I bought patio furniture. Like, you're here. You're not going anywhere. You bought
patio. You got to sit on that patio furniture now.
Oh, they bought patio furniture. Yeah, they're probably here for the long haul. You know, like, that's what it feels like.
Next comes the bocce ball court,
right?
In the backyard.
Like, yeah, like, patio furniture is one of those things where when you buy patio furniture, you're like, oh, okay.
Well.
Now you're going to, you know, I mean... I mean, probably a smoker is going to be next.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she wants to buy patio furniture. I could buy a smoker, you know.
We got the hookup on that.
She'd be all in on a smoker.
Dude.
That's why I said, like, why am I going to go? And it's kind of this interesting philosophy. If somebody said to me, hey, we have this job in L.A., a major market. Okay.
But you could make that work geographically, right?
Because
it's only 5 hours away.
San Diego is probably the only place that I would be like, whoa, hey.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Like, obviously, you know. I'd talk to anybody in Phoenix.
Right.
Okay. But to get me out of Yelp, you're going to probably have to get a crane and a tow truck that's got, like, 12 cylinders. Because,
yeah,
you know, like, my life is pretty good.
Right.
And we bought patio furniture.
Yeah.
What's
the next thing? If patio furniture made you feel old, what's the next thing that's going to make you feel old?
I don't know. We've been paying for our own vacations for a while. Like,
okay.
I don't know. I don't know. We were sitting out there last night on our brand new expensive ass patio.
Was
furniture.
It comfortable?
Yeah, it's nice. But we were talking about, like, what are we going to do next?
I don't know.
Add some ceiling fans, maybe put some misters out there. Like,
see, and that's the misters. Yeah, see, that's a great, because then you can at least tolerate the heat a little
bit
more.
But see, this is what you buy patio furniture.
But then you got to buy misters, and then you got to
buy
a fan. And then next thing you know, you got a flat screen out there with the smoker so you can chill and watch the game.
You know, like, and then a pergola.
Yeah,
or,
I mean, that's,
you know,
if we're being really honest.
A pergola on the veranda.
Yeah, if we're being really honest, you're probably going to get a pergola next, and that pergola is probably going to have a fire pit, so then when winter rolls back around, we can sit out there.
So now it's a fire pit to go with our patio furniture. Like
the, under
but this
the pergola.
Is my point. This is my point. Why would I go and do, why would I move?
Right, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Why would I?
And by the way, let's be honest. Everybody makes it out like the heat kills people here. I mean, yes, it does, but it's not that big of a deal.
Hot.
I mean, it's hot, but it ain't that, like, it's for a couple months. I always put it this way. I'll take our summers over Midwest and East Coast winters.
Yeah, probably. But this is the whole pool conversation. Right?
See,
like,
that's tough.
We priced out a pool and it's between 30 and 50 G's. I'm not doing that because you don't. A, think about the cost of maintaining that pool. We have a pool at our rental property, and it's about $5,000 to $6,000 a year.
Yeah, and the pool that you would put in our backyard would be very different than that. That's like a diving pool. It's really deep. So, I mean, maybe a little bit less, but still thousands of dollars.
Yeah. By the way, Real Fat Jesus says, Monty, if you ever leave me for the East Coast, I'm getting $140 million and your patio furniture, which is fantastic after a nice early dinner at Old Country Buffet. I don't disagree with that. You got to turn that Kawhi laugh up. Ken. Says East Coast living is horrendous. There's not enough New York style pizza to move there. I would agree with that. But why would I ever move there?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like
that's what I'm saying, dude.
10 years ago, sure, I'd have been gone already. I'd be working in New York already. But, you know, like, it's just not, it's not one of those things where I don't know. I don't know. If somebody, like, where would you live? Like, San Diego or Salt Lake City are the only two places where I'd be like, yeah, I'm out.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Salt Lake City, and I think I've said this 1,000 times, Utah's the best place I've ever lived.
Yeah, dude.
I love it. So I would go back to Utah. I would move to San Diego.
Yeah, I mean, I think
that's probably it.
I think the thing with Utah isn't necessarily the quality of the radio that goes on there, but the quality of life. Like, with, you know, we happen to love winter sports, and there's a lot you can do there. So if you like that lifestyle, Salt Lake City is obviously going to be awesome. But I mean, it's really tough to beat San Diego. It's tough to beat LA if you have a good situation.
Right.
There's LA. Yes. LA in a crappy situation is a pretty crappy place to live. But again, if you have a decent situation and you're making really good money, like, that's going to be a good setup for you. I've never personally been to Seattle. You've been to Seattle. I don't know. Everybody says it's great, but it rains a lot. So I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. And as far as the East Coast is concerned, I just don't have an interest in living there. I'd love to visit it. I'd love to, you know, take a trip and run through New York and Boston and see all that stuff. But I don't know. I don't think I want to live there, dude. Like, I've been on the West Coast for, you know, most of my, like, half my life now, you know, and this is my side of the country for sure.
Yeah, I don't know that I could live East Coast. I think I'd have a lot of trouble with that.
Yeah.
Cold wise. Now, I could get used to it. Again, everybody knows that. But anyway, you know, it's not the point.
No.
The point is, don't build furniture together.
Yeah.
You do it or she does it, period. And buying patio furniture is kind of like the next evolution of adulting. Mm-hmm. I don't know why it's weird. It had like an impact on me. So I just thought I'd throw that out there. We've avoided Donnie all show.
Donnie.
Should we finish up the program? Cause speaking of the Yelpatory, I actually have to go make money. You know, should we finish up the program talking about Donnie? You guys are on a trip today on Twitter. I don't know what you coronavirus has done things to you.
View this the same as the flu.
You know. So Donald Trump has been doing these briefings. And a couple of things happened with the coronavirus. This Ellen thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been a huge Ellen fan. I don't hate Ellen.
She's a big deal. People. There's a lot of people that love her, but I'm with you. I'm not a huge Ellen person.
But it's just never been, like, I've never watched her show, not once. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, right. It just has never been in my ecosystem. But what the hell are you doing? You're running. Okay.
I'm trying to get the dog up here. He's needy this morning. Okay. I'm sorry.
I'm talking about Ellen.
Yeah, I know.
Please.
Yeah. Sorry.
Thank you. So anyway, it's never been in my ecosystem. I just am not an Ellen guy. Yesterday, she apparently said on her show that for her, quarantine is like jail. I've been wearing the same clothes for 10 days and everybody in here is gay.
Well, she's qualified to say that, first of all. Second of all.
No, she's not qualified to say that. Ellen's never been to jail. She's sitting on a $15 million estate, right? Like, she's sitting in the middle of a palatial estate,
mm-hmm,
talking about her life is like jail.
Mm-hmm.
Ellen, it's not. Okay, you were kidding? Cool. What if I had said, my life is like jail, man. Like, I've been wearing the same clothes and everybody in here is gay.
That'd be different.
Why?
Because you're not Ellen, I guess, and you're not gay.
Oh, that's right. Because I'm not famous and I'm not gay.
Right.
I think it's absolutely ridiculous.
Mm.
It is. That few things that people say annoy me. That annoyed me. That annoyed me.
Okay.
It really annoyed me.
I mean, I don't know. I think she's clearly not in the right state of mind. Clearly, I mean, she has no experience with jail. I was more referencing the fact that she's allowed to make gay references because she's gay.
She said that there's gay sex that goes on in prison, Jake. That's mm-hmm. what she was saying.
Mm-hmm.
She was saying that they wear the same clothes and all the guys have sex with each other.
Yeah.
That's inflammatory. Like, am I the only, like, I feel like that's.
Yeah, well, I'm just telling you, I don't think she'll get in trouble for it. I don't think it's.
You don't think it's a big deal. No. So I'm being Mr. PC police here.
I don't think you're being Mr. PC police. I just don't think when Ellen says something like that, it's a big deal. And the reason it's not a big deal is because she's not a big deal. She has her fans. She has people who support her, but she's not.
You don't think Ellen's like a big deal?
No, I don't think. She's not difference making to our world. She's not like,
wow.
She's not athlete, big deal. She's not.
Well, she is a lesbian, and she has one of the biggest daytime talk shows in the history of television.
Okay, which I've never watched, right? And right. And any working class person doesn't have time to watch, right?
Sure. But so, but that doesn't mean that people who are at home don't watch it, because Ellen has a good view, a huge viewership.
Mm-hmm.
She has a whole online presence. She is, I mean, she, everything she's done, I mean, she's broken barriers for women. She's broken barriers, you know, for the LGBTQ community. Like,
so when you're thinking about, hey, someone who can really make a difference, does Ellen comes to your mind first?
Yeah. Well, not first, but if you said to me, is Ellen making a difference in the world? Yes. I mean, she's an inspiration to women. She's an inspiration to the gay community. She brings, I think, courage to a lot of people in the gay community, because she is on TV every day, and she is proud to be a lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, I think Ellen makes a huge difference. And one of the reasons I'm so disappointed is because she's a role model who has typically taken her social status very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one thing to be a comedian, which she is, and she's very funny. It's not funny to joke about being in jail and how all the people in jail are having gay sex. Like, that just isn't funny. I don't know. I probably am making too much of it. And then there's Donald Trump. So, A, am I the only one who thinks he should not be doing a daily briefing?
He shouldn't be.
I can't be the only one.
He looks like an idiot. He embarrasses himself on a daily basis. That's just what happens.
So, yesterday, you know, in Wisconsin. Oh, Wisconsin. The fine people
damn
of
cheeseheads.
The cheddar state, or whatever the hell kind of cheese they make there. Gouda. Okay, cool. The brat stop. they decided they were going to have their election yesterday. They decided that they were going to make people line up and vote in person. And so Donald Trump yesterday was railing against mail-in ballots. And this exchange is classic Donald Trump. He was asked by an NBC reporter about mail-in voting.
So you were highly critical of mail-in voting, mailing ballots for voting.
I think mail-in voting is horrible.
But you voted by
it's
mail
corrupt.
In Florida's election last month, didn't you?
Sure, I could vote by mail for that.
How do you
reconcile because I'm
that?
Allowed to. Well, that's called out of state. You know why I voted? Because I happen to be in the White House, and I won't be able to go to Florida
what's
to vote.
The
but let me just say,
mailing within
well, there's
state
a big difference between somebody that's out of state and does a ballot and everything sealed, certified, and everything else. You see what you have to do with the certifications, and you get thousands and thousands of people sitting in somebody's living room signing ballots all over the place. No, I think that mail-in voting is a terrible thing. I think if you vote, you should go. And even the concept of early voting is not the greatest because a lot of things happen, but it's okay. But you should go and you should vote. I think you should go and you should vote. You look at what they do where they grab thousands of mail-in ballots and they dump it. I'll tell you what, and I don't have to tell you, you can look at the statistics. There's a lot of dishonesty going along with mail-in voting.
Yet you mailed in your vote. And you essentially just sat there and decried the fraud of mail-in ballots, and then you're like, "Yeah, I mailed in my ballot because I can." Like, what?
Like,
are
I don't,
you kidding
I just
me?
Don't get it, dude. I don't understand. He's trying to say because he's the president and he's doing it from the White House that
and
somehow it's better.
Certifications.
Yeah, like okay, I don't get that, dude.
I vote by mail every election in Arizona, and there's no certifications. Okay, there's no certifications. Mm. You get the ballot. You sign it, you put it in an envelope. Actually, you get the ballot, you fill it out, you put it in the envelope, you sign the envelope, and you mail that and go off.
Yeah.
That's it.
Simple as that.
There's no certifications. Is there? He keeps going on about voter fraud and how, the 2016 election was full of fraud. Okay, so wait. So then you got elected by voter fraud because you won the election.
Lost the popular vote by a lot.
But, you know. Real Fat Jesus says, cut him some slack. He clearly never has a chance to go to Florida. I mean, good point. I mean, when does he ever get to Florida?
Should talk to his boy Bob Kraft.
A week, you know. It's a joke. He goes to Florida all the time. Mm-hmm. The point is, I'm just amazed by it.
Yeah.
And then, like, his whole thing about, you know, these ventilators to the UK.
Dude,
he ripped M3 last week, or 3M. I said
3M.
Hello, that's a BMW. He ripped 3M last week because they continue to export masks. And he, without really looking at it, and then 3M put out a presentation that said, if we stop exporting masks, it's going to net us less masks. And they were right. So he then turns around yesterday and sends 200 ventilators to the UK. And people lost their minds.
Yeah.
People lost their minds. There's a critical shortage of ventilators around the world, including in the United States, where by all accounts, we're going to have a crescendo in deaths. We had 1,200 deaths yesterday. Now, I haven't heard of mass shortages or whatever, but you can't rip 3M for sending out masks and then turn around and send out ventilators to the UK.
Well, clearly he can. Clearly he can. Just like he can't vote from home, but then rip voting from home. So, you know, yeah, that's just who this guy is. And I'm just telling you, like, that's why this whole thing will, I hope it's the end of him. I really do. I hope that this is like the last thing. Like, I really do. Like, how much more do we need to say that this guy is not qualified to be president of the United States? Like, how much more do you need?
Well, and a couple other things that have come out this week, like, you know, he's saying that nobody could have planned for this.
Nobody could have planned for it. They knew about it in June, bro.
Nobody could have seen it coming. Well, you had reports in the fall, in August and September, that said this was a real issue. Your trade guy, now the new social doctor guy who proclaimed himself the expert on coronavirus, wrote you a report in January that said we're screwed. We're screwed.
Yeah, dude.
I'm screwed.
You know, like,
come on.
He writes this report, and then Trump says yesterday, no, I never saw that report. I didn't read it. I didn't know about it. I didn't read it. So your trade secretary sent you a report and you didn't read it. And then you kept saying, we're going to treat this like the flu. It's going to go away.
Idiot.
It's going to be amazing. It's going to just disappear.
View this the same as the flu.
Right? Like, so my point is, he is in trouble. Now 55% of Americans, according to Nielsen, disapprove of his handling of the pandemic. And I just want this to be over. I am so frustrated with hearing that. I mean, guy, 12,900 Americans have lost their lives.
Yeah. And you want to send ventilators. Okay.
I just want it to be over.
Yeah.
12,900 Americans have died.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, you know, four times the amount of 9/11. I mean, we are losing rock stars and lawyers and food workers and humanitarians and just everyday hard work and good folks.
Yep.
And it's terrifying to me.
Yeah.
And you know, my mother-in-law is 70 something years old. My wife has asthma. Like, it's terrifying to me.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife is yesterday like, hey, you know, let's run up to the store. And I'm like, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
My mother-in-law is sitting in our house, like making masks for people. Like, what have we come down to? I just want this shit to be over with.
Yeah, I don't understand why like when you as a family talk about who goes out and who doesn't, there's no chance they should be going out.
Dude.
I don't like going out, but I'm the one who should be going out, if we're being honest.
If we're being honest. I don't know. The whole thing just scares me. It's why I take exercise pretty seriously.
Yeah.
You know, I've been trying to be more active, and it just this whole thing. So
it's
anyway.
Crazy, bro.
It is crazy. I don't know. Yeah, absolutely. Calvin on Periscope. I agree with your point 100% about, you know, maybe we should take a little more appreciation, time to appreciate life a little more.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we're all frustrated about baseball. I'm not frustrated about baseball. You know, I'm frustrated about people dying. People will die.
Yep.
That's my point. Anyway, that's it. We'll be back on Friday morning at 6 a.m. Pacific time. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.